Mark Rotenberg is executive director for the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, D.C. He also teaches information privacy law at Georgetown University Law Center. He joins us this morning from Boston. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, apparently, this Michigan probate court decision doesn't establish a binding precedent when it comes to the privacy of these emails, but do you think it's an important ruling?
I think it is in two respects. So, first of all, it's important that the ISP, the service provider in this case, Yahoo, basically said that it was going to follow its policy, which was to require a court decision. And secondly, the probate court, giving the opportunity to look at these issues, I think reached the conclusion that most people probably would have reached, and that maybe in some circumstances it is appropriate to disclose the email to others.
Let's talk about some circumstances. You had Yahoo. They cooperated with the family. Now, what about in the future? What about a case that maybe isn't, it's not so apparent that the deceased would actually want their email read by somebody else?
Absolutely. I mean, and I think this is one of the interesting questions, of course, that this case does raise. I mean, you can imagine circumstances where one's private communication, perhaps a person would just as soon like to disappear when they were deceased. Maybe they don't want anyone to see the email that they received or the draft messages that they were about to send. And I think one of the consequences will be to get people to think about, as part of the process of writing a will, that maybe you want to say something about what you think should be done with your email.
We're talking about the deceased. What about people who become incapacitated by illness or accident? Should guardians have access to the email?
I think these are going to be very interesting questions, and I think it's important for the courts to be involved, because you see what happens if the court isn't involved is that the Internet service provider, the communication company, in effect, has to make the decision on its own. And I think for all of us, it's really in our best interest that these companies really understand that their responsibility is going to be to protect the privacy of their customers, that is to say the people who have these email accounts, and they should not be disclosing that information unless they're required to do so by someone else.
What about the people who write those emails? What about people who are actually just mentioned in emails? I mean, is there privacy violated? Does
the
potential exist?
I think that's another area of the law that there's going to be a lot more attention over the years. By tradition, the focus has really been on the person who originates the communication, and in some situations, but not all, the person who receives the communication. But we now have forms of communication that are really much more elaborate than a traditional point-to-point message, like a letter or a telephone call, for example. We have, you know, companies like Google, for example, offers Gmail. They actually look at that content and generate some advertising. I think one of the questions that the courts will need to look at is, you know, is that something that's permissible?
Do you think people give up their protection of their privacy when you send something out?
Oh, I hope not. You know, there's a lot of talk nowadays about how, you know, we have all the benefits of technology and we're not going to be able to safeguard privacy. But I think that's not the right way to look at the world. I think one of the remarkable things about the development of privacy law in this country has been how it has responded to new technologies. There were, you know, computer databases being put in place in the 1960s and 70s across the federal government, and everybody said, boy, we could have a real Big Brother problem here. And I guess one answer might have been at that time, well, you know, that's the way it's going to be. But fortunately, you know, Congress and others said we can have computer technology and still protect privacy.
So do you think new laws needed, or are we going to see more and more cases in the courts about this?
I think it's going to be a combination. What typically happens is that the courts and the Congress get into a bit of a dialogue over what the appropriate scope of privacy protection should be with new technology. A court, for example, might look at a situation and say, well, there really might not be a reasonable expectation of privacy if, for example, someone is using a cordless phone and a neighbor is able to overhear that conversation. And there was such a decision a number of years ago. And Congress could look at that and say, well, you know, that may have been where the law was at that point in time, but as the Congress, you know, there is the ability to say, well, we think there should be an expectation of privacy in the use of cordless phones.
It sounds like you're saying we're still in the infancy of this.
I think so, and I think that's also part of what makes this so very interesting. people talk about, you know, the loss of privacy and, you know, whether we're going to be able to preserve privacy. But I think we're at the very beginning of a long national dialogue about how to safeguard privacy. You know, a few years ago we talked a lot about email. I think today people are talking more and more about instant messaging, for example, and new technologies that will raise new privacy issues.
Mark Rotenberg is Executive Director for the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, D.C. He joined us by phone from Boston. Thanks for your time.
Nice speaking with you.